You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
Just enjoy the wins.
Just enjoy the wins. We're being too negative. It's positive Tuesday.
Oh, I'm just, you okay? I'm so tired of talking about Fizziak.
Yeah.
Did you see my tweet to him today?
What'd you say?
Did you see my tweet to him today?
I did.
I said things that should stay away from social media. USA away from Steve Fizziak. Fizziak.
Hitman, fighter of the Hitman, champion of the K. You're a master of sliders and strikeouts for everyone. Save man.
Welcome to another Pine Tar Podcast, regular season edition. It is April 15th, tax day. Yordano Ventura is taxing the Astros through three innings. And right now the Royals are up 3-1. Obviously the song you just heard is Save Man by SoftBank Royals, a dedication song to one Mr. Greg Holland. Done by, looks like his name on Twitter is at SoftBank Royals. So check that out. Get with him on Twitter. Follow him. He'll teach you a little Japanese. You'll learn some Aoki talk with him. But let me bring in my co-host, one Mr. David D.B. Lesky. What's going on, Dave?
Oh, you know, just living the life, watching Ventura throw fire past Astros hitters.
Yes, yes. Normally we don't talk about games when they're going on, but when a guy's pumping 100, tossing in 95-mile-per-hour cutters, 84 to 85-mile-per-hour curveballs, and 88-mile-per-hour changeups, you got to mention it. The kid is just brilliant and beautiful to watch so far in his first two starts.
Yeah, I have a feeling that this podcast is going to be a lot of Gordon just broke a bat drink. But this is going to, well, a lot of that. It's going to be, so the Royals bullpen has been, hang on. I think that's going to be the podcast tonight because we're watching the game as we're recording. So sorry about that in advance, but Ventura's captivating. I can't help it.
Well, that'll be you. I'm not watching the game, obviously. I'm in a blacked out area and I'm not in my living room. So I'm just watching the game day. So I'll keep everybody abreast with the game that they've obviously watched the previous day by the time they listen to this.
Yeah. As you're listening to the play-by-play of tonight's game, you will know what happened.
Dave, kind of let's talk about our first subject, the bullpen and the struggles that we've seen through first few 11 games.
Yeah. I've been asked about the bullpen a couple of times. I've been a little busy with radio stuff over the last couple weeks.
Dropping the radio.
Yeah, you know it. Sorry, this is one of those moments that's just destroyed the Astros scoreboard. I've been asked about the bullpen a lot. And so I really sat down to look at it this morning. And what I noticed is, the ERA is bad. But the fielding independent pitching, that's the number that I like to look at for bullpens a lot because it kind of shows more about how they're pitching than actual ERA in some instances. And ERA is over 5 for the bullpen, but the FIP is 3.09. And it got me looking a little bit deeper. And really the big issue for the bullpen, and I don't think this is a surprise to anybody, but it's they walk too many guys. They've just walked way too many guys there. Averaging like I think something like 5.5 walks per 9 innings, and that's not okay. But the other thing that gives me hope is one, that's not going to stay that high. I will promise you that. Two, their strand rate is insanely low. I took a look, and if you look at every bullpen in the expansion era, which is 1969 through today, the Royals' strand rate of 50. Well, I don't know what it will be after this game, but. Of 54.8% heading into Tuesday's action is the worst strand rate in baseball since the expansion era began. So something tells me they're going to come back to the pack and be much better than we've seen. And we know this is a talented bullpen. Yes, they miss Lou Kochaver. There is no question about that. And I think they missed them more than we expected them to miss him. But there are talented relievers out there. Wade Davis as a reliever, I think, is solid. Aaron Crow, if he can get to the point where he's the fourth or fifth option on the bullpen, I think the Royals will be fine. I just feel like it's an issue of small sample size, of a little bit difficulty getting into a rhythm. They've only thrown, leading into Tuesday night's game, 26 and a third innings. That's an insanely low total for 11 games. The starting pitching has been outstanding. There's been one bad start in 11 games, which I guess, no, I don't know. I take that percentage if you get 16 bad starts throughout the whole season.
I'd say Shields' start was a bad start.
I'm talking about innings wise. Starts that eat up the bullpen. I think if you eat up the bullpen 16 times throughout the whole season, you're in really good shape. And I just think that it's partially a matter of not having enough innings to go around right now. That's not to say that, I don't know.
I think it's a matter of not having defined roles. Obviously, he's going with Wade Davis as his eighth inning guy. I don't know if I really agree upon that. I don't know their hesitation. Well, I shouldn't say that. Kelvin Herrera presents some hesitation with him.
Sure.
And his control hasn't been great to start the year. And in the past, he's given up large home run numbers. But for a portion of a season.
I mean, I don't know. Did we talk about this last week? When I looked at the numbers, he had 139 appearances, not counting his 2011 when he pitched a couple times as a rookie in September. And the 19 games to start 2013, right before he was sent down, he gave up 8 of his 14 career home runs.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a rough patch.
He had a rough stretch there to start the year last year. And for the most part, the guy's been dominant, and he has the most dominant stuff out there besides Greg Holland. I understand that Ned is comfortable with Wade Davis, and I don't really have a problem with Wade Davis in that role, but you want to find a pairing, like he said. Well, then Aaron Crow isn't that guy.
Right, absolutely not.
It's Kelvin Herrera is your guy, and even if you don't like... Even if you're not sold on Herrera as the eighth inning guy, well, then he can be your seventh inning guy. But Aaron Crow is not your eighth inning guy. Aaron Crow is your fourth or fifth reliever. I like Lewis Coleman more than Aaron Crow.
I do too. I think Coleman's more of a platoon reliever. I know his numbers were much better against lefties last year, and that could be a trend. But I think because of his delivery, lefties are always going to hit him better than righties. I don't know.
Another guy that could develop into that eighth inning guy is Danny Duffy. Right now he didn't show much of his slider changeup in his first relief appearance, but he got outs with his fastball. And in short stints, in one inning stints, Danny Duffy can do that because he can throw 96, 97, pump it out there, change speeds a little bit as Moustakas takes a changeup on the outside edge and tries whatever. And Danny Duffy can just and get outs that way. He got, you know, he gave him 2+ innings the other night, the other day, and primarily with his fastball. It was pretty much fastball only. It was the only thing he was really getting over. He was working with that curveball, but I really wish he'd switch over to the slider. I think it just offers a better deception and better.
Well, I think he might not be comfortable with it yet.
He might not be, but in a 7-1 game, that's the time he needs to get comfortable with
it. Sure, that's a good time to use it.
And Danny's too big of a competitor, and that's what he needs to get through, is that, here, this is a 7-1 game. If I'm going to work on a pitch, this probably isn't a bad opportunity to do it. I can work on my changeup. He did throw a few changeups. He dirted a couple, I think, and his curveball, he wasn't controlling that either. I just don't like his curveball in that it doesn't. He can't. It's hard for him to throw strikes with it. It's such a big break on the pitch.
Well, and even you know, I talked to him in spring training. I think you did too. And he even told me that. He even said as much that he knows he has trouble getting strike calls on it because it's so hard to for the umpire to see it.
Yeah, we've seen that tonight with Ventura. He's thrown a couple curveballs. I just don't like most umpires' decisions with the pitch. They don't know when exactly it crossed the plate. It's just it's not a good pitch to get
a curveball is
strike. It's a swing and miss pitch.
Right, exactly. To me, I would use a curveball when you need a swing and miss, and also to set something up. If you want to have a curveball, that's just dandy. You should probably throw it 5 to 7% of the time, and that's it.
Yeah, I think it would be a great pitch if it was just a show-me pitch for Danny, something he could freeze a hitter out on occasion they're not expecting. And I think it would really play up at that point, but right now it's just not a pitch that works for him. But even with just a fastball and occasional breaking balls, I think he could go out and dominate a seventh and eighth inning with that stuff.
I agree. And I think what you're going to see, what worries me, I think Duffy can be a really good reliever. I don't want him to be a reliever because I still think he can be a good starter. But I also feel like the Royals bullpen has struggled to start the season. And if Duffy continues to do what he did the other day, if he comes in and puts zeros up in an inning or two every time out, the Royals are going to have a really hard decision. Because if everybody's struggling but Duffy's not, how do you send him down when the bullpen is so important? So I could see a scenario where he is in the big leagues for most of the season as a reliever. And I didn't really think that earlier, but when he first got called up, but I started thinking about it and I thought that's a real possibility. If you look at the reason for him being called up, it's pretty much a numbers game. As I mentioned a couple times, it's when the Royals needed a reliever, they couldn't turn to Joseph or Brooks because they both still to be in the minors for 10 days. They couldn't turn to Dwyer because he was put on the AAA disabled list. They couldn't turn to Collins and Bueno because they were on the disabled list still, not eligible to come off. And so at that point, who do you go with? Marriott's already up. I guess you could go with Buddy Bauman, but I don't think the Royals see a whole lot in him. And I feel like the Royals needed an impact arm. And I really think that had Joseph been eligible to come back up, he would have been the guy. But because he wasn't, they had to go with Duffy.
No, I agree. I like the move personally. I've seen Danny Duffy dominate AAA hitters.
And
he doesn't have much to learn. If you watch a Danny Duffy and you watched it against Minnesota, it took him quite a few pitches to get through those innings. Why? Because he's encountering a lot of foul balls. He needs to find a breaking pitch. Dave Island is working with him on that slider. At least he was. I don't know if they're going to continue that work or not.
I hope so.
He was working a little bit with James Shields on the changeup. So he can continue that work up there at the major league level. He can't do anything more at AAA.
Well, I don't agree with that completely. I don't mean to cut in, but I'm going to cut in real quick. So I guess I do mean to cut in. But I do think there are things to work on that go beyond going 6 1/3 innings and striking out 8 and walking 2. I think that you go out there and take your AAA starts almost like spring training, where you're working on that slider and where you're working on to a point that you don't worry about what the minor league hitter does. You worry about what a big league hitter would do. And I know that's not a mindset that works for a lot of players, but I think that's what Duffy needs to do in AAA in order to get to the point that he can be a quality big league starter, if that makes sense.
The problem with that is that his fastball is going to get by AAA hitters.
Well, and that's why he can't be. I mean, there have to be games that Duffy is shelled in AAA because he's working on his slider. It's like a spring training game. Pitchers are working on things, and Duffy's got to go out there and not rely on the 94-mile-per-hour fastball to get AAA hitters out, because that's not going to happen in the majors.
No, I think he needs to. I understand what you're saying, and there, trust me, there's no one way to skin the cat. I mean,
right.
he could do it both ways. But at this point for him, I think this is a good opportunity for him, and it's a good way for him to learn how to get hitters out with the pitches that he's currently working on.
See, I agree that it is a good way to do that, but at the same time, my fear is not so much that it's the wrong decision as much as it's a decision that the Royals will end up leaving him there and never revisit him as a starter.
I don't really fear that much, because let's face it, James Shields is going to be gone. They're going to need starting pitching. You can't lean on Bruce Chinn. Yeah, there's a possibility Bruce Chinn's in the rotation next year and even late this season. But that's obviously something they don't want. That's why they have that contract clause on there. Kyle Zimmer is yet to even throw a double-A pitch this season. Other than Aaron Brooks, who had a decent start tonight for Omaha, there's not a lot of guys beating down the door. They're going to need a young pitcher like Danny Duffy to develop. I don't think they've given up on that, is what I'm saying. They've said it time and again. They sent him down to start the season. This wasn't the plan they had either. This is kind of like you said, this is what they got stuck into. But I think it's good for both parties in that Danny can learn how to, hopefully he can learn how to get rid of hitters faster. That's the problem. It was the problem the other day. He pitched, he didn't give up any runs, pitched outstanding. But if you look at the line, look out the amount of foul balls he gave up. The guy, there's things he can work on at the major league level that I don't think he can work on at the AAA level. That fastball and getting it by hitters, he needs to either change the speeds, maybe work with a two-seam to get some easy ground balls or something. There's things that he could work with. He can work on, though, and to become a better major league pitcher that I think he would have a tough time learning at the AAA level, because those hitters just can't hit that fastball. They can't.
Oh, you're right. There absolutely are things he can work on that you get better work in the majors. My fear is that I've been a Royals fan my whole life, and I've seen this story play out before. And you're right. It makes all the sense in the world that they will not turn their back on him as a starting pitcher. So that will be – sorry, Moustakis just made a really nice play. That will be the question. We'll see what they do.
No, it is. It's a good question to have. It's a fun question to ponder, and I'd rather watch Danny Duffy and help that bullpen right now, because they do need a little bit of help.
Absolutely.
But I think this is a good time to break, and then on the backside, let's bring in Michael Engel.
We are now joined by a Mr. Michael Engel. You may know him from such work as Kings of Kaufman, and, well, really, that's about it. But now he's also on the Kansas City Baseball Vault, one of the Royals Royals Podcast Network podcasts. I guess that sounds better. And some big news, Michael Engel is soon to be, as in this weekend probably, the newest Pine Tar Press writer. So let's welcome in Michael Engel. How are you, man?
I'm doing pretty good.
Was that intro grand enough for you?
Well, I'm used to sometimes having Kamler introduce me for some things, and he will usually throw in a lot of superlatives and really fancy titles and stuff. But, I mean, that's fine. I'm okay with that. We'll let it slide this time.
Well, then it's Queen Michael Engel. Join us. please don't email the podcast saying how sexist we are. I was just joking. It's okay. It's
the Pop-Tarts are in the mail, Mike.
That's that's actually the main selling point that Lesky told me when I actually agreed to join up with you guys. He was like, we mail you Pop-Tarts every week.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
They're year-old Pop-Tarts.
Oh,
that's accurate. But also, I will tell you that once you have to be with us for 6 months before you get to choose your flavor. So, hey, you know what? It gives you incentive to stick around, and it'll be okay. You can suffer through the stale boysenberry Pop Tart days,
unfrosted.
Yeah, unfrosted.
All right. Well, let's get started. Let's talk a little bit first about your podcast, because as I mentioned, we're all part of the Royals Podcast Network, something we're putting together, and we put together that that includes this podcast, the Pine Tar Podcast, your podcast, Kansas City Baseball Vault, Triple Play Podcast, and Walk Off Talk, and all have been just great. And we love putting out all this Royals news. And you guys have had some changes over the last week or so. So what's going on with you guys? Just to tell our listeners, so we can get a little cross promotion going on.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, a pretty significant change, really. I mean, we're entering our fourth year of doing this podcast. We started in March of 2011 with our first show. And at that time, it was just myself and Troy Olson, who most people will know as Casey Royalman. And, you know, along the way, we added Jeff Herr and we added Fake Ned, and then Fake Ned dropped out. And then it was just three of us. And we've kind of been rolling on that with Jeff, Troy, and myself for the last couple of years. And, you know, Troy, I think a lot of people know he's moved to Albuquerque, and he's been kind of, you know, going between a few different jobs, trying to find the right thing for him. And that and a couple of other projects kind of taken him away. So he's actually stepping back from the Kansas City Baseball Vault as the host. We'll still have him on periodically for different things. And he's actually got some access down there to the Isotopes. And so, you know, that puts him in contact with some, you know, minor leaguers who come through who might be former Royals. He's trying to get down there. They've got El Paso in town, so he's trying to talk to Jeff Rancor. So that's something that might be coming up. But for the most part, going forward, it's going to be myself and Jeff Herr, and Jeff will be taking over the hosting duties because I frankly don't want to be the host. I'm going to be the color guy, so to speak.
Do you think that Troy will try to convince Jeff Rancor that he is deaf?
I hope so. I hope he tries something. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if Troy's that sly to do that. He's kind of a forthright kind of guy. I don't think he would do that. But yeah, I mean, he's got to ask him about that video. I think Rancor's got about 6 months of answering that question, if not more.
That's on the light side,
right? I mean.
The best part of that whole video is Ryan Jackson's, like, just his comment, idiot, just idiot. That's all. He looked mad. He's like,
yeah, it's why just look at just utter disdain.
This idiot. This guy's just a complete, utter idiot.
Well, wasn't there some guy from the Royals who heard about it and was like, yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
It was Yost. Yost said that.
Was it? Okay. Yeah. Well, even better.
Man, that was...
That's the guy. That's the leader of the clubhouse right there, folks.
Yeah.
Showing them how to be pros. That's the guy showing them how to be pros.
Well, I mean, he just wants to be accepting and you know, open to all kinds of different people and abilities. That's what Jeff Rancor does, I guess.
And just the description of how they talked about, they had a serious part in the game and they came out and talked to the guy, and of course he just gave up a dinger. And he just did not pay attention at all that they're not, that they're covering their mouth while they're talking to the guy.
Just... Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I imagine in that case, I mean, you play baseball for, you know, 20 years and end up, you know, playing every day. You probably just take it for granted when someone's doing that. But still, that's a pretty big giveaway right there that he should have seen, and he completely missed it. Totally. So,
but what's your thoughts of the team so far, Engel, of the boys in blue?
Oh boy, I mean, nobody's really hitting except Sal, and you kind of see, I guess, Infante a little bit, but Sal
quietly Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah, and. But that's about it. I mean, and those guys are also spread out in the lineup that it's no surprise that, you know, they can't score anything. You know, when you get one guy on and then you got three guys who aren't hitting and then, you know, the next guy. So it's been kind of a pretty rough little struggle right away in these first 2 weeks. You know, they're playing Houston tonight and they've kind of swung a little better. So that's kind of encouraging, but it's been pretty frustrating, really, because, you know, it's a huge year. I mean, it's the walk year for James Shields. They're coming off the 86 wins last year. A lot of people really expect them to do something, you know, locally and nationally, and they kind of come out and, you know, they start 4-4, and that's not too bad, but they did blow some close games that they had a pretty good shot of winning. And, you know, opening day, they really should have won that game. And then, you know, they go to Minnesota and they just get shelled. And that's kind of the last team that you would expect them to get shelled by. I mean, they beat them 15 times last year, and it's not like the Twins got that much better, but, you know, just a lot of things going wrong. Bullpen's been shaky. Starting pitching's been okay in some spots and kind of disappointing in others. But yeah, I mean, it's frustrating. It's really easy to kind of get crabby about it, especially after last weekend where they were just terrible. And, you know, just didn't look like they were interested in playing ball at all and swinging at first, second pitches. And I don't know. I mean, they made Ricky Nolasco and Kevin Correa look like Cy Young candidates. And, you know, that's really not anything that they should be aspiring to do. So
not okay.
That's not cool. And so it's been kind of frustrating, kind of annoying. And, you know, hopefully they turn it around. Because I don't think anybody likes being annoyed watching your team.
So, okay. I think the million-dollar question is the season over?
Of course it is. I mean,
if you look at my mentions, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have a theory, and I don't really have any real science or anything to support it. This is completely just a hunch, but you know, we're playing, you know, games start in March and you're playing in April, and you know, you're coming out of, you know, January and February where you've got, you know, the NFL playoffs and it's one and done, and then you get into March Madness and you know, you've got every game matters towards the end of that. And I think there's just a period where people get in that mindset where every game means so much more, and then you get to baseball and it's basically the longest season game wise you're going to find in pro sports. And so, and teams are going to have a 4-7 stretch. I mean, pretty much every team does. I mean, what's the major league record for wins in a season? It's like
116.
Yeah. And they, you know, so you're still going to be losing 40 some games, even as the best team in the history of baseball by, you know, wins in a season. So, I mean, you're going to lose games. So, no, I mean, it's not over. It's the pattern is maybe a little disturbing because, you know, you come into this year and you expect, all right, Eric Hosmer had a good bounce back after a terrible 2012. And you think, okay, maybe he takes that next step. You look at Billy Butler's track record and think, okay, last year was a down year, but he can come back from that. You figure Alex Gordon will be healthy, which I don't think anybody really thought he was completely healthy the second half of last year. So if he can come back and be, you know, what he was in 2011 and 2012, you know, that's going to be a benefit. And then you bring in, you know, two guys in Nori Aoki and Omar Infante who are filling holes that last year the Royals started out with Frank Gore and Chris Getz. And so that's, you know, even if it's a slight upgrade, it's still an upgrade. So top to bottom, you kind of feel like, you know, you're worried about Mike Moustakas and Alcides Escobar, but the first seven guys, you know, the other seven guys, you're not worried as much about. And then they come out and really nobody's doing much. And so I get where the panic is, but, you know, you still have to consider it's a long game. And if this was happening in the middle of May, June, July, I don't know if people would really be as up in arms about it as they have been.
Yeah, I kind of think that the time of the year makes it look a little bit worse because Clint and I were talking off air, and the three games they played against the Twins were really the only three games they looked horrible offensively. I mean, they weren't scoring runs, but they were seeing pitches, they were working walks, and they get to Minnesota, and that just all goes down the toilet. And I think that those three games, had they been in May, June, July, they wouldn't have hurt the overall offensive numbers as much, the on-base percentage numbers. And so it wouldn't have been quite as noticeable. But you mentioned Billy Butler, and he's a lightning rod. He's a guy who, I mean, you're on the Twitter. You understand. There's a lot of Billy Butler disdain out there. And I mean, the way he's been hitting to start the season, there's not a whole lot of response to it because they're right for now. What, mm-hmm. what What do you say to people who come at you and tell you that Billy Butler's terrible and the Royals would be better if in a cardboard box with their DH?
Well, and this is one of those cases where, you know, the great thing about baseball is that even in the bad stretches, you've got, I mean, players will get up there 700 times if they're a regular. So we're looking at 40, 50 plate appearances. I mean, that's a fraction of what he's going to do. And then when you consider what he's done in his career, where he's been pretty consistent from, you know, his walk rate's been pretty good. He's always been pretty good at getting doubles. He's never been a home run hitter, you know, at any stage. 2012 looks like a fluke. He had 1 year where he hit 25 homers in High Desert. But, I mean, let's be honest, I think any of the three of us could probably put 10 of them over the yard in High Desert. So, I mean, let's, you know, the perspective is always skewed because he looks like a guy who should be able to put the ball, you know, out every time just on a whim. And he's really never been that guy. And so I think that was the first thing you saw that in, you know, last year a lot, where people really didn't like him because he wasn't hitting home runs. But he was doing so much else. But then you also get into he's just a DH. He's slow. He does ground into double plays. And so all that combined with kind of the way he started this year, where he's hitting everything on the ground. Yeah, I can understand why people are really upset when he comes up and when he doesn't succeed, because he should be better than this. And it really just kind of confirms everything they've always thought about him. And so, you know, for me, I'm in the same boat. I don't have a lot to say about it because there's only so much where you can really point to what he's done. And at this stage, he's just not doing it. I mean, I would think that he's probably the most studious guy on the team when it comes to, you know, breaking down his at-bats and other pitchers and his swing and everything. So if anybody's going to be able to, like, just turn it around, I would think it's him. I mean, you saw in, like, July 2012 where he pretty much was hitting everything for extra base hits for, like, 2 weeks. And then different stretches throughout his career where he just gets hot. And that's all it really takes is like one good week. And, you know, I think he'll be right back there. But, I mean, he's Andy McCullough tweeted, you know, probably an hour ago something about don't be surprised if he gets moved down to sixth. And, you know, I think short term, that's probably best for the team. And it pains me to say that because, you know, I've always been a Butler fan and I like the guys like Butler who can just go up there and they just hit a bunch of doubles and, you know, hit 50 doubles and take walks and hit 300 and I'm okay with that, but I definitely get why the hate is there, and especially right now, why it's intensified.
Do you think that this could be a guy who's just hit his peak early? He's a big-bodied guy, and he might be on a decline. I mean, last year was a down season. Yeah, he drew walks, but a Billy Butler walk is just not very valuable. It's nice to see a guy in a Royals lineup carry a 370 to 380 on-base percentage. But when he's Billy Butler, what's that the equivalent of? 330, really?
Yeah.
Let's face it. It's going to take at the very least, two hits to drive him in.
Yeah, unless it's a homer. And let's be honest. I mean, the Royals aren't a home run hitting team either. So
they have two this year, man.
I stand corrected. No, I mean, you're right. It's really kind of tough. And I do think that maybe that is something to it. I mean, we were talking a little bit off air about, you know, big players and things like that. And he's been a guy who's always, he's never really missed games. He's never been on the DL, as I recall. So, you know, he's been healthy in that regard, but it is something where you kind of wonder if maybe it is something where his skills are going to decline quickly just because he is a big guy. And even if he's working out and even if he's maybe in better shape than I am, he's still not in better shape than most of the players that play Major League Baseball. And when you're talking about guys who, you know, are getting paid millions to get guys like Butler out, yeah, it's, you know, it's going to be pretty easy to exploit, you know, any weaknesses that they find if he can't adjust to catch up to him. And, you know, I'd maybe be less worried if he hadn't started out basically with like a 7-to-1 ground out to fly out ratio, because he's always been a ground ball guy, but it's been so extreme early on that, you know, maybe he's slow. Maybe he's, you know, just not seeing it the same. I don't know. I don't know what the problem is. I haven't really looked that closely at it. But it could be something like that. There's just a really quick decline for him.
Yeah, I feel like even if he is in decline, I don't know that you would see it be this drastic. So
yeah,
I just kind of feel like it's one of those things that we have to ride out. And I think McCullough's right. He's probably going to get dropped in the order. And I think he probably should at this point, because you're putting a guy who's – he said it himself. His mechanics are off. He's not getting the load in his hip that he usually gets and that he wants, and he's having a really hard time finding it. So if that's the case, I don't really see a problem with bumping Perez up to the four spot the way he's been hitting. And I know it's a series of random occurrences and all that good stuff, but at the same time, right now, Billy Butler is not Billy Butler. I think he will be. I think he will be in 2 weeks probably. He'll figure it out, and he'll be hitting again, and the Royals can go back to the lineup they want. But sorry, I got a little long-winded there. But
I'm used to
Dave never.
You know, you guys are mean.
Yeah, I know.
That one guy though that might not jump out of it, and that's Mike Moustakas.
Yeah.
What isn't it time? I mean, they're talking about 100 ABs. We're talking a small window for this team, and you're going to give this guy who can't hit anything right now 100 ABs? That seems way too generous.
Yeah, I mean, and it's I don't know. The Royals have just the strangest standards for how they're evaluating guys that they get up to the majors, because, you know, first they said, okay, you need 1,000 plate appearances to know who a guy is, and then they move it back. Okay, it's 1,500. And then, you know, now they're talking about this, you know, let's wait for 100. If he does well in 100, does that really erase all the problems that he had in the previous 1,500? I don't think so. Does it? He's fixed. It's just, it's tough to buy that, just because players, I mean, yeah, they make leaps, but a lot of times those tendencies never really change. And even if they do change briefly, you know, they can revert pretty easily. I mean, Jeff Francoeur had a really good 2011. If I recall, he was swinging at a little better pitch selection, and then he went right back to exactly what he was doing. So even if they do have that success, I mean, you can't always change who a player is. And I don't know what they need to do with them, frankly. I mean, I think they're past the time where they should, you know, put him in the minors. Just, you know, that should have been last year, but they didn't have any other real options. This year, they at least kind of have Valencia, and I guess Giovitella might be able to play third for a little while or something, but I don't know. He looks lost, and you know, I'm not one to really get on someone for body language too much, just because, you know, I think he gets overblown, but it also doesn't look like he's too interested when he makes an out in a lot of cases. Look at, I mean, the last out in that Minnesota series, he pops it straight up, and he just kind of stands there and doesn't really do anything, so... You know, I don't know what to do with Moustakas. They just have to ride it out and hope that he gets to a point where he can hit 250 and get the occasional walk here and there if they're trying to pitch around him. And maybe he you know, accidentally puts 20 over the fence. And, you know, if he can just be average, you know, they'll get some value out of him. But, you know, it's kind of tenuous that he's ever even going to be average at this stage. And I think you've seen enough at bats from him to, you know, make a judgment that maybe he's never going to happen. So maybe it's a change of scenery thing later on. Maybe it's, you know, if the Royals aren't in it in July, maybe that's something to look at. I mean, they're looking to move Shields, and they try to find somebody to replace Moustakas and kind of go from there. I mean, it's painful because he was a guy who, you know, when he was in the minors, people really kind of thought he might have a shot at being the one to break the record, you know, to break Balboni's 36. And he's not anywhere near that right now.
Well, he's close. He's only 36 away. So that's something.
The fact that he even stood into that AB in that last at bat in the Minnesota series is a mistake. Well,
That's right. Kind of my next question. I got asked this a lot, and I want to hear your opinion on this angle. Why is Danny Valencia on this roster? What is the point?
Well, he's got to play second base. He's got to be the backup second baseman, right?
You're right. Sorry.
Yeah, that's not going to hurt at all to have him in there. I mean, he's just – yeah. I don't know. I mean, in some regard, I wonder if they were more interested in keeping him just because they know that – you know, David Lowe is not the biggest guy in the world. I don't – you know, I think he's a good fourth outfielder type. But he did have a good year last year, and he's done all right so far this year. And so maybe it is because they just want to justify making that trade. I mean, it's not like the Royals haven't shown that they are pretty self-conscious about some of those moves sometimes, and maybe they stick with the guy too long. And you know, if they're not going to use him, you know, they shouldn't have him on the team. But they do keep him on the team just because I think it looks bad if they cut a guy that they traded someone who's, you know, being a serviceable major leaguer. But I don't know. I mean, if you're not going to pinch hit for him in the spot where they used Moose or use him to spell Moustakas after a bad game or something, then yeah, there's not much point in using him because he can't play anywhere else. You know, you're not going to put him in over Hosmer at first at any point. You know, I'd even think Billy Butler is maybe just as good an option to play first base as Valencia. So I don't know. I mean, it's confusing. They tried him at second, and, you know, I think he did an admirable job trying, but he's not a second. Right. He's not a second baseman. So, I mean, it's not, and you can't expect him to play third base all of his professional career and suddenly try to play second, which is completely different, and actually take to it. And then, you know, he's a platoon guy. Anyway, he can't hit righties very well, but he does crush lefties. So that's his one role. And so he's got, what, 4 at bats? I mean, that's pretty ridiculous. I think Maxwell's kind of.
He has 8 at bats. Oh,
my bad.
And they don't have a pinch hit at bat yet this season.
No, they don't. And they have a pretty deep bench. I mean, they've got guys that, you know, I'm not a huge Maxwell fan, but, you know, he can kind of run into a homer here and there, and Dyson's okay. I mean, I think they clearly feel comfortable with either of those guys if there's an injury in the outfield. So, you know, why aren't they trying to fit them in? And, you know, I wonder if it would be different if the Royals were scoring runs a little bit better and didn't feel like they needed to keep these guys in to, you know, not get in their domes for one, but also to kind of keep the continuity of the lineup, which, I mean, if you look at it, how many times has Yost really varied the lineup so far? I mean, other than substitutions, it's been the same lineup. And just, I don't know, if I'm guessing, probably 8 out of the 11 games.
I think it's been the same lineup every game, but the game that Sale started and the two that Infante missed.
Uh-huh. So yeah, and even when Infante missed, they were still batting. At least Giovitella was batting where Infante would have been. And where was Valencia in his start?
He hit second against Sale, and I believe he hit sixth when he played for Infante.
Yeah, so they pretty much have had the same Aoki, second baseman, Hosmer, but, you know, et cetera, lineup in all but like one game, pretty much. So I don't know. Maybe that's just being stubborn, but I think Valencia needs to get in there. You know, if they're going to have him, he's a guy who is, you know, if the other team brings in that situational lefty, go to Valencia. That's, you know, that's his strength, is hitting left-handed pitching. And if they're not going to do that, then, yeah, I mean, why not just bring up Christian Colon and let him get his feet wet at the big league level and go from there and have someone who could has at least played shortstop, you know.
Yeah, some the thing with Colon is you don't want to start his service clock.
Right.
Sorry, really, I almost made it through that.
God, remember when they drafted him and he was going to be a fast riser through the minors because he just has a good feel for the game and everything? And
he was pretty much everybody's lock to at least be major league average.
Yeah, and I mean, he's not even there yet. I mean,
he'll never be there. It's,
but he's super average at AAA, so that's neat.
He's below average at AAA.
That's true.
It's well. Yeah, the development hasn't really kicked in for him.
He never had a neat tool in any way, so I mean,
no, and that's what, you know, he had some, he showed some pop in college that just didn't translate. And that was with the, but that was the last season of the old school bats.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So now I think when you see guys, you really get a true feel of if this guy's going to have power or not. Where back then you didn't really get that.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. If a guy in college hits 15 homers in a season, they're pretty powerful because those bats are, that's a dead ball era in college right now.
Yeah, it's not very fun to watch.
No. But,
besides, obviously, the guys on the offense, is there anything that scares you on the pitching side?
Well, I mean, coming in, I wasn't a big fan of the Bruce Chen signing. So, you know, seeing him come out in his, what, second start and go, you know, not even get through four innings, that's not a good thing. But I think you're just going to have to take that with Chen. The bullpen, though, has been kind of scary. Aaron Crow has not been sharp. Wade Davis has been either really good or he's been really bad. Collins obviously has been pretty awful in every appearance and now in the DL. And, you know, I'm a big Kelvin Herrera fan and he hasn't looked great in every outing. And even Greg Holland's kind of shaky. So a lot of those guys, you know, that were pretty much the one of the best bullpens in baseball, everybody's had some issues at some point. And that's definitely a concern, but that's the one point where, I mean, it's really easy to just holler small sample size and kind of, you know, I think in this case it applies pretty well because you're looking at just a handful of innings from these guys. And this time last year, people were looking at Greg Holland and calling for his head basically because he'd blown that game against the Phillies, and
yep.
the next day had issues too, and people were like, man, I can't believe that we have this guy here. And then he goes on and, you know, towards the end of the year, you know, was an all-star and completely dominant and just, you know, second best closer in baseball. And so I think over time that's going to even out, but there, you know, it's not like Aaron Crow's been consistent any time in his career, and it's not like Collins has been consistent. So, you know, those guys give me some kind of concern, and Herrera had his first half last year where he wasn't very good. So that's, you know, I mean, I think you had to expect the whole bullpen to regress because they were just so good. And then losing Hochaver, who, you know, would have regressed as well. But that still hurts because then you have to fill in with Aaron Brooks and Michael Marriott, and that changes the decisions you can make in-game as well. So, I mean, that's something to keep an eye on. And Lewis Coleman didn't look good in spring, you know, injury or not. And he hasn't really looked very good in what he's done so far. So, you know, that's an area of concern. Shields looked pretty bad in Minnesota. But I don't know. I mean, starting pitching, I'm not terribly worried about. I'm not really the hater of Jeremy Guthrie that everyone else is. I just don't expect much, which I guess is kind of a different way of, you know, lukewarm praise on him, I suppose. I don't like Vargas, but you can't argue with what he's done. He's been pretty solid in every outing so far. And Ventura, you know, he's pitching tonight and he looks great too. So, you know, the rotation I'm not as worried about. And, you know, if maybe the combination of Kauffman Stadium and the defense continues to really help, you know, Guthrie and Vargas and guys who rely a little bit more on, you know, keeping fly balls in the park and guys who rely on the ball being in play and a really good defense taking care of it. You know, it's not as scary. And, you know, if they can pitch deeper into games, you might see the same thing that you saw last year where the bullpen didn't really work as much as they had any other year. And maybe that'll help them out. And, you know, I'm not really worried about the bullpen, but I do think you have to at least kind of, you know, look at it with, you know, a little bit out of the corner of your eye just in case things keep going south. That's about it, though. I mean, you know, you just kind of the areas that you expected to be a strength haven't been the greatest strength in that bullpen. I think it'll even out, but it's still something that you got to keep an eye on it because those guys can. You know, it's like you flip a switch from good to bad pretty quickly with a lot of bullpen arms. It's not unheard of to have, you know, a guy have three good years and then just flame out. So it's something to keep an eye on. And it's less of an automatic than it was last year for sure.
One question that I've seen a lot of is who, or I guess I'm shifting back to the offense, just so you know.
Okay.
Is it time to fire Pedro Grifol?
Sure.
And I enjoy talking with you about some of these. Ground ball to short from Butler. I enjoy talking with you about some of these ridiculous notions from certain fans and what your response is. What do you say to that? What do you say to the people who say the Royals offense has been rough for 11 games? It's time to fire Pedro Grifol.
Yeah. At some point I want to see a team completely run by fans. I just want to see it because
they would have 47 hitting coaches a year.
Oh my goodness. And they'd be using, you know, the DFA so often, it'd be crazy. And they'd be so frustrated with why they can't trade a guy who sucks and all that. I don't know. I mean, it's really easy. The easiest scapegoats are always coaches. I mean, at any sport, I mean, it's always easy to do that. Because I don't know, I think people get really connected to the players and they hear about these guys. And for the Royals, I mean, we've heard, okay, well, Eric Hosmer is an MVP candidate and Mike Moustakas is a 40 home run guy and Alex Gordon could be the best overall player in a generation and things like that. And, you know, you expect them to do that, but you know, how many players actually meet those kind of expectations? I mean, he's looking like Mike Trout and that might be it. You know, you're just not going to find guys who always meet those lofty expectations. And so when the players come out and they struggle, yeah, I mean, you're going to ask about the coaches. And, you know, the Royals kind of set the precedent last year where they came out and they had Maloof and Andre David and, you know, canned them 2 months into the season, you know, 2 months after they had just been, you know, with the team. So it is it's a knee-jerk reaction for sure. I mean, I think Grifol had a lot of good ideas, and I think he helped a lot of the turnaround last year, you know, where the Royals were terrible the first 2 months on offense, and they kind of woke up in the last 4 months. And I don't, you know, it's tough to give him too much credit, but I think he has to get some. And I think it's an instance now where, you know, he just gets way too much of the flack. And I mean, it's just crazy. It's ridiculous. I mean, I don't have to tell you that it's ridiculous to be, you know, you're 2 weeks into the season, let's change hitting coaches. Oh, okay. I mean, just from a personnel standpoint, who's going to be the guy who volunteers to jump into that job next if they've shown that, okay, we're going to give these guys a short leash like that? I mean, you're not going to get any kind of real continuity between the coach and the player if you're just shuffling all the time. So I don't know. I think that's silly, but it's maybe not silly, misguided. Let's say misguided.
Silly's okay too.
What? Okay. Silly's I'll go silly okay. then. Silly and misguided. I'll double down.
I got to wonder if Maloof just got fired. I mean, obviously Grifol and Brett, they asked them to be in the job, but I wonder if Maloof just, if that quote hadn't got out, if he would have kept job. That seemed like that was the final. Like,
that timing was interesting.
Right. It happens in like a day and a half later, he's done. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And I wonder if maybe he kind of knew it a little bit and was like, well, I'll just say it. Why not? What do you have to lose at that stage?
You know, I'll tell you, it kind of makes him look a little bit better in his mind, maybe, because if he says, I think I'm getting fired, I'm going to come out and say it's not me, it's the offense, it's these guys. And, yeah, it ended up not working out for him so well as far as his perception. But I can see the rationale there. If he, you know, if he thinks that's going to make him look better to the fans and to other teams around baseball maybe who might want to hire him as hitting coach.
I'll tell you guys, just being around the team the little bit I have, I just don't know how much – influence the organization really has on a guy, to be honest with you. I mean, I've watched Bubba Starling, who's struggling as much as any prospect can struggle, go back to his old hitting stance this season.
Yeah.
That's a guy grasping for straws and not listening. You can't tell me the Royals decided to do that after tinkering and changing so many things with him.
Uh-huh. And, you just go back. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and we've seen it in other organizations. You know, Rasmus was a big problem with the Cardinals prior to his trade and his dad being involved. And we've heard it with Hosmer and Moustakas when they've struggled. Well, I got to get on the phone with my brother or my dad. Or I just don't know how much an organization really has an influence over these guys. Considering these guys, high schoolers now, go to these showcases and they have advisors and pitching coaches and hitting instructors and people that have been there with them since they were 16. And they get to the pros and they're 22, 23. Are they really going to lean on the organization who's negotiated contracts with them, kept them down possibly longer than they thought that they need to be in the minors? Or are they going to lean on those people that have been there since day one?
Yeah, it's easy to see if that happens because, I mean, that's, you know, I help coach Little League and I'm a terrible Little League coach, but what I see a lot is, you know, I know. But the parents and the uncle and, you know, we hear get a lot of kids where it's like, well, my uncle told me I should do this. I was like, well, okay, that's not really helpful for you or for us. But I mean, it's really hard to combat that because, I mean, you've got people who have been doing this for a while and, you know, the player has been around his friends and family and high school coaches and, you know, AAU coaches and whatever. And yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, they have to lean on what they knew, what got them to this point. And, you know, if somebody comes around that they don't know as well, they may not trust them as well. And, you know, it's really easy to either ignore it or, you know, try it. And then if it's not immediately successful, then, you know, you go right back to what you were doing. And it kind of goes back to, you know, the things like, you know, the Jeff Francoeur adjustment where, you know, he went right back to chasing that slider, you know, with two strikes, whereas he may have spit on it for a couple months in 2011. So it's hard to change players and it's hard to change habits. And I can't imagine that it's any easier when you've got a full organization with, you know, seven minor league teams and instructionals and, you know, you're also trying to scout and do other things. And then you've got this guy here in high A that keeps, you know, going back to what he did. And, you know, you can focus your attention on him, but you also have to, you know, you can't zone in on him because you're going to lose focus on someone else. So it's not an enviable job from, you know, just as a hunch.
Well, here's something interesting that kind of just popped in my head is I think those guys in the minors, the guys who don't listen to the instruction, who are the guys we just talked about? Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, Bubba Starling. These are all American-born players who were drafted high. I think you see the Latin players, the foreign-born players come in who aren't drafted, who maybe don't get the big-time bonus money. They're the ones who seem to listen. And I'm not saying that the Royals have had a high success rate with anybody, but I mean, who's the best pitcher of the Royals, starting pitcher of the Royals have developed in the Dayton Moore era? It's sad that
I'm looking right at him.
Exactly.
Right, Giordano Ventura.
And look at who he's throwing to.
Exactly, Salvador Perez. That was the next point. And,
yeah.
And so, I don't know, maybe there's something to be said for
Royals. And then you look at the successful players in the bullpen, Greg Holland, that's a guy that you're a 10th round pick. You better listen or you're going to be catching a bus somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Kelvin Herrera is a guy, you know, he was a Dominican signee. I think he is Dominican, right? That's not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I people say, oh, he's from the Dominican Republic and he's from Venezuela or something. And I always shake my head. I didn't want to be that guy. I think it's an interesting point to look at is the guys who have really fully developed in the Royal system are the guys who have to listen to instruction. So I'm not saying the Royals are a top notch organization or anything, but the guys who have had to listen to them are the ones who seem to be getting there.
Yeah. Yeah. And the guys who sign when they're like 16, you know, who in the, you know, that's a high school, that's a sophomore or junior in high school.
Right.
So, I mean, you're kind of, I guess, insulated from some of the same issues that they may have had. And according to what Ryan Lefevre, these guys play in those big Venezuelan stadiums all the time, too. So
7 million people every game.
Right. It's just, this is old hat. No, but No, I mean, it might be onto something where, you know, now that you mentioned that, it makes me think of that study that Rainey did about draft age and like the younger players who seem to, you know, reach a higher ceiling all the time. You know, like,
yeah, you wonder if that's instruction, what that is.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, they're younger, so they have more time to grow into whatever their upside's going to be. But yeah, I mean, they do also have, you know, where they're in a different point developmentally. I mean, if you've got a guy like Lindor, who didn't he sign at, wasn't he 17 when he signed? Or when they drafted him, at least? So a guy like that, I mean, 17, God, I mean, I was pushing carts in the Walmart parking lot when I was 17. I wouldn't know what to do with a big signing bonus and jump being thrown into, you know, professional baseball. So of course I'd be listening to those guys. But if I get, you know, $6.5 million and I've been the pride of Gardner, Kansas for all my athletic life, I mean, who am I going to listen to? You know? So that might be onto something. That's an interesting angle.
Yeah, I come up with one of those a year, so we're all set.
Well, there you go. It's only April 15th. Look at
that. He's taking my angle, too.
Yeah.
Man, this guy's ego. He just has.
Well, that's why they call him for 810 all the time.
Wait, who are you again?
Exactly.
Those Pop-Tarts better show up, man. I'm telling you.
That was a team effort getting there. I will say that. I mean, yeah, I did the hard work, but you know, you guys were on the phone, so there's that.
Well, I think that's probably as good a spot to stop and let you go, Engel. Let you go and enjoy the bullpen as they try to wrap up this Ventura start.
Oh boy, I hope they do, because otherwise we're going to hear it on the Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be a lot of fun.
He gave him 7 quality, so they got to wrap it up. They got. What, Wade Davis in the 8th, or are they going to go with Herrera?
Depends on who's been warm.
Yeah.
Herrera? Okay, that's actually interesting. Herrera was warming up that inning. Let's see if Yost does what he did last time.
Exactly.
Because Herrera was warming up in that bottom of the 7th inning, and everybody listening to this is going to be like, we know what happened, guys.
Right.
We don't yet, so.
Yeah, I'm not taking that bet.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm not either.
I know better.
Well, welcome to the team, Mike. I expect
looking forward to everything.
I expect a Pulitzer in the mail.
Do they have Pulitzers for blogs now?
I think you're going to take us over the next level.
There we go. Awesome.
At least you can get us into the Baseball Writers Association.
That's no pressure. I know all those guys.
Exactly.
I think I have Ken Davidoff's email address. That's about it.
Well, we're all set then.
I know, right? He used to be president.
Well, so did Dutton. We got Dutton's email.
Hey, yeah, there you go. We're set.
We are.
All set.
Let's go get famous.
Done.
On it. We'll talk to you later, Mike.
All right.
Thanks for coming on.
You bet.
Always good stuff from Mike Engel, the newest writer on Pine Tar Press. We're really excited to have him. You can read his work. I believe he'll be writing weekly for us, but we'll never turn down more content. We're really excited about what's going on at the website at pinetarpress.com. We've added some new writers, Engel being the most recent one, and just trying to get you the best possible Royals coverage that we can. So thanks for listening. Thanks for reading. Thanks for listening. Thanks for stopping by. And we'll come back to you next week. Hopefully the Royals have had a better week than they did in before this one.
Yep. See you guys later.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.